Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your conference titled Building and Maintaining State-Tribal Partnerships to Improve Child Welfare Programs, co-sponsored by Adopt Us Kids. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, there will be a question-and-answer session, which instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance, you can press star then zero, and an operator will assist you. And as a reminder, this conference is being recorded. And now it's my pleasure to announce your host for today's conference, Mary O'Brien.
Thank you. My name is Mary O'Brien, and on behalf of the National Child Welfare Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, I want to welcome everyone to today's teleconference on building and maintaining state-tribal partnerships to improve child welfare programs. As the operator mentioned, this call is jointly sponsored by the National Child Welfare Resource Center for Organizational Improvement and the collaboration to Adopt Us Kids. This is the first in a series of three calls on collaborating with specific partners being emphasized in the second round of the CFSRs. The second on engaging youth in the CFSR and program improvements will be held on June 14th, and the third, engaging courts and building court agency collaboration, will be held on June 26th. We are really pleased to have with us today teams of people from two areas of the country to talk about tribal-state collaboration, one from South Dakota and one from Oregon. We asked each team to talk about crucial steps in building and maintaining partnerships, successes and challenges, and the benefits of ongoing collaboration, and strategies to involve tribes in the CFSR process. John, are you there? The operator?
Yes, I am online.
Now, is it possible to put us into an interactive mode?
Sure thing. What I'll do is open up all lines at this time, and if anyone does have any background noise and they don't have a self-muting feature, you can press star 6 to mute your line. I'm going to go ahead and unmute all lines now.
Thank you, John. That's great. Yes, just do remember to use that star 6 function to mute your line if there's some noise going on in your space. Great. Well, we had lots of states and tribes registered for today's call, and also some folks from ACF regional offices. We have too many people registered to go through individual sites on the line, but we do sometimes just like to hear voices out there so we don't feel like we're speaking into the void, and also so that you all know that you can speak up and ask questions. We are going to go through today our presentations from the state of South Dakota and then take questions, and then go through a presentation from Oregon and take questions at the end. But I do want you all to know that you can speak up. Let's just hear if there's as I say, we also like to get a sense of the fact that there are some people out there that we're speaking to. So maybe I could ask if there's some folks on the line that would want to identify themselves, participants, states or tribes from, say, the northern half of the country. Could you just speak up and identify yourselves?
Yes, my name is Bill Mumberto. I'm Director of Family Services for the Little River Band of Ottawa Indians in the state of Michigan.
Great, thank you.
Also, Carol Seaman and Aaron House from the State Court Administrative Office in Michigan.
Uh-huh. Cami Rush from the State of Michigan Department of Human Services.
Great.
Bob Raymond from Child and Family Services in Helena, Montana, along with several other people.
Great.
Paul Cloutier, Native American Affairs Director for the Michigan Department of Human Services.
Okay, great. I'm sure there are several others, and we just, as I say, if you didn't have any chance to speak up, know that you can speak up during the question period. Anybody from the South want to identify themselves?
This is John Johnson from the Tennessee Department of Children's Services. I'm the ICWA representative.
Great. Okay, great. How about any ACF regional office folks?
Gary Brown, Region 2.
Region 2. Great. Okay, good. Thank you all. So you see the lines are interactive, so we'll be able to have some questions later on. Before we started, I wanted to tell you all that the handouts for this call are on our website. The link to where the handouts are was in the email that you got with the phone number for this call. If you did not get the handouts, you can get them from our website, which is www.NRCOI, that's National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, the abbreviation, NRCOI.org. From South Dakota, we have some background material, the collaborative charter that they have developed there. Called the file on the website is called South Dakota Charter. From Oregon, we have a PowerPoint of their presentation today. It's on the website as either a PDF or a PowerPoint file. It's called Building and Maintaining State Tribal Partnerships to Improve Child Welfare Programs. Oregon has also provided another PowerPoint from Warm Springs that was we got today and was emailed out to folks and will be on our website tomorrow. They also have a couple of background pieces, a copy of the law that they will talk about, and also a piece called Midtown ICWA Unit Review Methodology. We also put on our website a link to a document called Collaborating During the CFSRs, which the Children's Bureau put together, and it's part of the procedures manual for the second round of CFSRs. That has a section on collaborating with tribes that you might find useful. So those are the handouts on the website. I'm going to start by turning the call over to two knowledgeable folks who've done a lot of work on state tribal collaboration who will be helping me moderate today's call. They have also worked extensively with South Dakota. Steve Preister is with us as an associate director of the National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, and Kathy Deserly, also who's worked with South Dakota on behalf of the collaboration to Adopt Us Kids. So I'm going to turn it over to them to begin.
Maybe, Kathy, I can start, and then you can come in. I just want to say a couple sentences. Is that okay?
Sure.
I just wanted to say that Kathy, for Adopt Us Kids, and myself for Organizational Improvement, have been working with South Dakota now for over 2 years, going out to South Dakota every 3 months and working with committees in between to create the collaborative circle for the well-being of South Dakota's Native children. We've made a lot of progress, but we've got a lot more work to do. We're going to tell you the story of the South Dakota Collaborative, focusing on three things. The first being the critical steps in building the partnership, being successes and challenges and benefits of ongoing collaboration. And the third will be strategies that South Dakota is developing to involve the tribes in South Dakota's upcoming Child and Family Services review. Kathy, do you want to add anything?
I just would like to just mention briefly how the collaboration to Adopt Us Kids went into South Dakota to begin with, to become a part of this. And in the beginning, we did not go in thinking that this would be a tribal-state collaboration necessarily. The Resource Center the collaboration to Adopt Us Kids was invited to come to South Dakota by the state to help look at developing a recruitment and retention plan that would address the issues of overrepresentation of Native children in the foster care system. And as a result of focus groups and work that went on around the state looking at these issues, a larger strategic plan was developed. And out of that plan came the request from the state for additional technical assistance, which is how the Resource Center for Organizational Improvement came on board. And then just through a series of steps and meetings and work, the group, as it formed, thought about the idea of a collaborative. And that is where, how we came to be there. And I just wanted to provide a little bit of backdrop to our role there. And I think Steve and I are probably going to step back and hand this over to the folks in South Dakota to talk about it from their perspective.
Yes, and if we could begin, Raymond, if you could begin by telling us the critical steps that we went through in South Dakota to begin building the partnership.
Okay, you want me to start with my piece, then?
Yes, Raymond, could you do that? Let me just say that two of the presenters today, Raymond and Teresa, are co-chairs of the collaborative circle, so they've got some experience to talk from. Okay, Raymond, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, first of all, I'd like to say my name is Ray Knoyer. I'm the ICRA director for the Yankton Sioux Tribe, and I guess it's good to be on this conference call, and it's good to be able to share what's going on here in South Dakota. Well, I'd like to start off, say there are 9 tribes in the state of South Dakota. They're the Standing Rock, Cheyenne River, Oglala Nation, Lower Brule, Rosebud, Siston, Wapton, Yankton, Crow Creek, and Flandreau Santee. The state of South Dakota provides direct services to 6 of the 9 tribes. History of the State Tribal Protection Service efforts. State tribal contracts and agreements began in 1978. In 1989, tribal liaison began. Quarterly meetings with the ICWA directors began in 1993. State and tribal work groups began in 2001. State Tribal Foster Care Adoption Work Group was created in December of 2001 at the request of CPSs to increase Native American placement resources. Focus was based on the barriers to recruitment, you know, compare licensing standards, you know, between the state and the tribes. Began by addressing licensing myths. State meetings were held over the last 2 years, and the new direction towards and we started a new direction towards collaboration. State, tribal, CPS, and tribes initiated action to begin working on recruitment and retention, retention strategic plan in November of 2004 with the assistance from Adopt Us Kids. The state tribal work group was invited to participate together with other stakeholders throughout the state of South Dakota. Decisions to move forward, to move from a work group towards a more of a partnership. The collaborative circle charter is created. Spring of 2005, state tribal work group met. Through the work group, agreed to continue, but in a new direction, plans for a collaborative began. March through September of 2005, the state tribal work group created the first draft of the collaborative circle charter. From there, the new collaborative circle members were officially seated in September of 2005. There's a difference between the work group and a collaborative. Work group, you invite or appoint, was appointed by the state for a limited and very divine purpose. The agenda was set by the state to meet state objectives. Limited, defined life until a task was completed. The difference between a work group and a collaborative circle is a collaborative circle, a group of community stakeholders, and that's where all the tribes and the state and everybody that was interested throughout the state came together and to form this collaborative circle. Who may be invited by the state or convene themselves? Who will work together for the best interest of all parties, and who collectively set an agenda that will benefit all partners. What is making it happen? Ongoing revisiting the commitment by all the collaborative circle members, focusing on a common goal, which is a Native American children, you know, to come together so that we can make this recruit and retention of the Native American foster families. Ongoing support of the state child protection services and tribes. Assistance from the National Resource Center and support of the federal regional office. That's my part of the presentation here, I guess, that I was going to present on.
So thank you so much, Raymond. I'm sure we'll have some questions after we get through the other two presentations. We're going to ask Teresa Nieto, the other co-chair of the Collaborative Circle, to talk about successes and challenges and benefits of ongoing collaboration.
Good afternoon. My name is Teresa Nieto. I am the Indian Child Welfare Program Specialist for the State of South Dakota Division of Child Protection Services. I'm also an enrolled member of the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate Tribe here in South Dakota. I'm going to talk about the purpose, mission, and vision of the collaborative, the membership of the collaborative, the work, and the work of the five standing committees that are under the collaborative, also about the reconciliation process, which here in South Dakota we see that as trust building, as a trust building process, and also about the sustainability. The purpose of the collaborative circle was formed to bring about stakeholders in South Dakota who were committed to improving outcomes for South Dakota's Native children. Our mission was to have the stakeholders come together to create a formal collaborative and that we were dedicated to achieving better outcomes for Native children. We wanted to improve our outcomes. We wanted to improve our commitment to the collaborative, and also we wanted to build those trusting relationships. We, all the time throughout our meetings, we are striving to improve our relationships between the state and the tribes, as well as the other stakeholders who are involved. One of the things, again, with our mission, what we do is we strive to protect our children through a system, or we would like for the collaborative to be a system that matches children with their culture, empowers families to create a safe and nurturing home, provides services that prevent children from coming into the system, and that if children do come into the system, that they return as soon as possible by individualized services. The vision of the Collaborative Circle came about that we, the Collaborative Circle, envision a system of child and family services and supports in South Dakota that ensure that each Native child is safe and thriving in a permanent, appropriate home, that families are supported in their communities, and that communities themselves take responsibility for ensuring that the vision becomes a reality. Within the Collaborative Circle, we have 38 members. We, as Raymond mentioned, we do have 9 tribes here in South Dakota. With those 9 tribes, each tribe has 2 tribal appointed members with 1 alternate. We do have family members. We have 3 parents and 3 youth who are all Native American. The state representatives are 9 members. We do have seven regions here in South Dakota. Each region has a regional manager, so each one of the 7 regional managers are members of the collaborative. I myself, as the ICWA program specialist, is a member, and the assistant division director, Merlin Wire, is from Child Protection, is a member as well. We have 5 providers, which is the Bureau of Indian Affairs, KC Family Programs, Children's Home Society, Lutheran Social Services, and the South Dakota Association of Residential Care. Our other stakeholders will be represented on the regional collaboratives that we hope to create in each of the 7 regions. I'm going to talk about our 5 standing committees. Our first standing committee is the ICWA Compliance Committee, which has the oversight of the 2003 South Dakota ICWA Commissioner's Report. Therefore, this committee is responsible and charged with carrying out the top 30 recommendations of the ICWA Commissioner's Report. They also do ICWA compliance and implementation and are right now discussing the focus of proposed legislation. The next standing committee is the Services and Stability Committee. They assess the service array in the South Dakota CPS regional areas. They assist tribes in assessing their own service arrays. They promote the sharing of resources. They also look at funding issues such as 4E contracts and as well as the infrastructure for 4E contracting. The third standing committee is the Placement Resources Committee, which is currently working on the family group decision-making process. They also do support. They're also looking at support for relative placement resources. An example is that they would like to have a kinship appreciation month. They also look at recruitment and retention of Native American resource families, and they look at culturally appropriate services for families as well. The fourth standing committee is the Education, Training, and Public Relations Committee. This committee promotes education about resource families. They look at different types of out-of-home family placements, such as relative, foster, and adoptive care. They also look at educating the community about the requirements to become a foster parent or to become a relative or adoptive resource. They look at funding available to help the needs of children that are currently in placement. And they also look at positive contributions that resource families into the community, as well as educating and training of public, tribal, private agency, and private agency child protection staff. The last standing committee is the Regional Collaborative Support Committee. This committee identifies service needs and reports how systems are really working at the local level. But first of all, they are looking at a creation and support of a child welfare collaborative in each, as I mentioned before, in each of the South Dakota's child protection service regions. We recently did, in December of 2006, we had NICWA as well as a consultant come out and do the reconciliation in child welfare with our collaborative circle members. And at the 2006 NICWA conference in San Diego, some members of the collaborative circle learned about the process of the reconciliation in child welfare, touchstones of hope for Indigenous children, youth, and families. This information was shared with the collaborative circle in May of 2006, and there was some discussion about having this incorporated in our process with the work that we do within the circle. We decided then that we wanted to form a planning committee to further this work with the circle. So we had representatives from CWLA, John George, and NICWA, Carolyn Maples Morrison, came to our quarterly August 2006 meeting and shared with us how the reconciliation process might be developed within our circle. We then decided that we wanted to hold a two-day reconciliation process with the circle, and that happened in December of 2006. The reconciliation process was facilitated by Sandy Whitehawk of the First Nations Orphans Association, and the two-day work began the process of trust building and engaging the circle in the process of reconciliation. Here in South Dakota, we would like to emphasize that for us, the beginning of the reconciliation in child welfare was more of a trust building for us. Based on our evaluations and the reviews of our event, we thought that, again, that this was successful in bringing about the idea of reconciliation to the circle. One of the outcomes of this process and with those evaluations is that we would like to rename the process to a name that better fits the beliefs and values of the circle members of the South Dakota tribes. That was one outcome. A second outcome from the reconciliation event was that the collaborative decided to form a standing committee to continue the work of the reconciliation process and also to look at the ongoing need of continual building strong and positive working relationships among our members within our circle. I would like to then now move into our sustainability. The collaborative recently entered into a services agreement contract with Casey Family Programs, the Indian Child Welfare Program out of Denver, Colorado. And we, within that agreement, we're looking at facilitating or developing over the next year, broadening the collaborative circle, and also to form our infrastructure. We are currently hiring or looking at hiring or in the last stages of hiring an independent contractor who will be made available to develop the work of the committees and as well as the regional collaborative. We're looking at beyond the one-year funding. Right now we currently have a one-year funding services agreement contract with Casey, but we also want to look at all potential resources and develop a plan for the sustainability of the work of the circle. Also, we want to come up with other methods besides just funding opportunities. We want to look at the implementation of the ICWA Commission findings, and we want to institutionalize new ways of assuring ICWA compliance. In the closing of that, the work of the Reconciliation Committee will identify new strategies for collaboration among circle members and then again look at the relationship between the tribes and the state on child welfare issues. And last, with the sustainability planning and the development, we're hoping that this would be a key element for the future of the collaborative circle.
Teresa, that was really excellent with a lot of good information. I'm sure we'll have some questions and discussions, but before we do that, I want to now ask Merlin, who is the Deputy Director of the Child Protection Services Division, to talk about the Child and Family Services Review. South Dakota is going to begin its second Child and Family Services Review with the on-site visit in 2008, and so because of the work of the circle, the state is looking to really involve the tribe. So, Merlin, could you enlighten us on this, please?
Sure, thank you. For our first CFSNR, it kind of was a learning experience for us from the standpoint of involving stakeholders. And when it came to the statewide assessment, I don't think that we, really probably took enough time to prepare for that because we didn't have the opportunity to involve the stakeholders like we would have liked to. So we're using that first experience to hopefully learn from it and, give us more opportunity this time around to start earlier in the process so we can involve more stakeholders both in the statewide assessment process as well as the on-site and what we assume we'll have, which is a program improvement plan. We did do, with the first round CFSR, we did do focus groups, and we did have a number of focus groups in the tribal areas that include both stakeholders as well as foster parents and other providers. And then when we worked on the program improvement plan, development of the collaborative circle actually came out of a strategy that we had included in the program improvement plan from the last review. For this next round, we're really going to work hard to involve the tribes and other stakeholders more extensively than we did in the previous review. And I should qualify this by indicating that at this point, we have not had a chance to discuss the full details with the collaborative circle. And one of the things that the approaches that we've taken with the collaborative circle is it's a partnership. And decisions are made as partners. So it's not like, we're going to say this is what we don't have tribes involved. What we will be doing is presenting to the collaborative circle some ideas that we have as far as how we think the tribes could be involved in assisting us with the statewide assessment. We had our first planning meeting May 9th, which was an internal planning meeting within our agency. And as Steve mentioned, we are set to be reviewed in 2008. The date is May 19th through the 22nd, 23rd of 2008. So we're getting into our year of planning for the statewide assessment. And what we're going to be proposing, like I say, this is going to be proposed to the collaborative circle, is involving them we're going to do focus groups around the state again, and involving the collaborative circle members in those focus groups as co-planners and co-facilitators, both in tribal and non-tribal jurisdictions. We also, from the last Child and Family Services Review, developed a work group that worked both on the program improvement plan and followed in implementation of the program improvement plan, and has continued to operate in the way of doing QA, monitoring progress and outcomes, and to make changes and enhancements in our system related to improvement in outcomes. And that work group is broken up into three separate subgroups, just like the Child and Family Service Review, which is the safety, and we did combine permanency and well-being into one subgroup, and then the systemic subgroup. I'm going to propose asking the members.
Could somebody please mute their line if there's some noise in the background?
Proposed to the collaborative circle that the members from the circle be part of those subgroups and that overall work group. And those work groups will be significant in working on the statewide assessment. And we're going to involve, again, the tribal representatives, hopefully, as well as other stakeholders in those work groups. And again, like I say, that's going to be significantly different than our first experience in 2001 when the statewide assessment was pretty much developed by our agency staff. Then as we work in the process of developing the statewide assessment, we involve the collaborative circle as a review body to continue to look at the statewide assessment developed both in information gathering and analysis to review the process that we're going through and review the information that we gather. And at the point that we start actually putting the statewide assessment together to be part of the review process and making suggestions for further ideas and also helping analyze some of the information that we put together in the statewide assessment. And then, of course, assuming that we're going to probably have a program improvement plan, we would request that the collaborative circle also be involved in a similar way in the development and implementation of any program improvement plan that we do have.
Well, Merlin, that's very exciting. That's the first I got to hear the initial ideas, and I'm looking forward to the discussion about the involvement of the circle in the CSR when the circle meets next in Sioux Falls on the 13th and 14th of June. Now, Mary, that's the three presentations. Do you want to take questions now, or do you want to save them to the end?
Yeah, I think it would make sense, Steve, to take a little break and take some questions for the folks from South Dakota.
Let me just say, we don't need to limit this to questions. Comments are also welcome from the participants.
This is Chris Hannes from Nebraska.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. How are you?
Good.
Good. I have a question for, I think it was Teresa. You had talked about renaming the reconciliation process. I don't know if I didn't hear what you were talking about renaming it to. Or did I not understand that?
Okay. Here in South Dakota, we see it more as a trust building between the state and the tribe.
Okay.
And so we would like to name it as that, as it being a trust building relationship between the two.
Okay.
Chris, let me just add that there's some historic reasons for that. There was a governor that had a reconciliation process, and there was another historical thing I don't remember, so we didn't want to get it confused.
Okay. And then I also wondered, you also made some reference to broadening the circle, and I was interested in who you might be bringing into the circle beyond the representation you have. I'm really impressed with the whole process that you've gone through and how you define the outcomes and the kind of the structure to it. So I was interested in where you're looking at broadening and also whether, I know that this is really focused on well-being of children, probably from the child welfare perspective, but are you looking at broadening to things like economic development or law enforcement issues or other things that impact children on the reservations that are not generally coordinated?
Right now with our regional collaborative committee, they are looking at setting up a regional collaborative in each of the seven regions, and that's where we would broaden it, but that's also where we would bring in those other stakeholders from the local level.
Okay.
So, yes.
And some of those people, Chris, might be the local legislators, other kinds of informal, less formal providers than we currently have on the circle. And we really see a lot of the work is going to take place in those regional collaboratives once we get them up and running. As far as broadening the agenda, we're certainly open to that idea, but our child welfare agenda is just so big right now, we need to get our hands around that first.
I understand. And then I had one last question was around the money. You said it's funded by Casey. About for the collaborative you currently have, what would you, just in a ballpark, approximately, what does it cost to operate?
Our service agreement with Casey Family Programs right now is at a little over $200,000, and that's just for the first year.
Chris, let me add that for the first 2 years, We had no funding except in-kind contribution from the state and from the tribes and the other partners. We've done all this work up to this point in time with no funding.
And the free technical assistance from the resource centers, right, Steve?
Right.
Yes, and that's pretty sizable because it's been two resource centers for 2 years.
This is Kathy Deserly, and I wanted to add that in terms of broadening the collaborative, each of the committees is continually looking for additional members to participate because a lot of the work, the majority of the work of the collaborative, goes on in those subcommittees, and then they bring their recommendations and motions to the full collaborative circle. So that's an area where there can be expansion as well.
Those are great questions, Chris. Other questions or comments from the conference call participants?
My name is Bill Mamberto, and I just have a couple of questions. You're into a reconciliation process. I'm wondering what brought the state, what brought you folks to this process at this point? I know there was some historical information provided, but, you know, we've been in Michigan here, and I have to tell you, I've worked on both sides of the table here, both with the state of Michigan, DHS, as well as I'm now a tribal director of family services. And one of the things that we have is that we've seemed to mirrored ourselves deeply in the mud of this process and really are looking at some way that we can effectively dig this out and build an effective collaborative to address some of the needs that we have here in the state of Michigan. And I'm wondering, one of the big things that I get, and I don't know if there's other tribal folks from Michigan on the in the conference, but you know, one of the things that I am getting is that the whole issue of trust has become a paramount issue for us within the state of Michigan. How do you get by that? I mean, I hear this reconciliation process, but it has to be a desire on both parts, I believe, on all the parties and all the stakeholders.
Do you want to talk about how that came to be, how your participation in that meeting kind of led to the bringing the reconciliation group to South Dakota?
What's that?
I was asking if Teresa could talk about how the reconciliation work came into South Dakota.
I myself and a he's a committee member for one of the standing committees. He's the co-chair of the Services and Stability Committee. We had attended the NICWA conference, the 2006 NICWA conference in San Diego, and had went to the Reconciliation and Child Welfare breakout session. When we came back, it was then that this standing committee co-chair proposed the idea of bringing that work in South Dakota to the collaborative, and it was several months later, or a month or so later, that we formulated a planning committee to look at doing that. We then invited CWLA and NICWA to South Dakota in this past October, and had them walk the planning committee as well as a couple of our executive committee members through that process. After that was accomplished, we then decided that, yes, this was something that we needed to do here in South Dakota to continue to build the relationships, but also to improve the trust between the state tribes.
Merlin, did you want to add something?
Well, I was just going to speak just real quick from that historical perspective that he brought up. You know, we had tried a number of efforts, as Ray had talked about, in regards to working with the tribes, but they generally were state-driven efforts, and one of the things that really, I think, started helping this click was that it was from the perspective that this would be a partnership, that wasn't the agenda wasn't set by the state, that the agenda would be set by the group. I think the other thing that we decided on, which has been very helpful, is involving someone that's in a sense outside, like Kathy and Steve, that they can facilitate it and assist us in working through a number of issues, you know, without it seeming that, you know, one side or the other has to press their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And then the revisiting, I think, all the time of where our commitment is at with it. I mean, there's been some very difficult conversations that we've had. And the key is whether or not people commit to coming back and staying with it. Because, you know, sometimes we get impatient and want quick results. And there have been good results from the standpoint of the development of the relationships. But it's taken time, and you got to stay with that.
This is Kathy, and I would like to add to what you're saying, Merlin. There have been some very difficult conversations in our meetings, and people who said they were leaving and not coming back have come back. So I do think that says something for this type of a process, for people feeling that they can work through issues, and it is an ongoing process.
I make an assumption from the discussion here that there's probably the ability to do that on your own between the state and the tribes was negligible?
I don't know, Bill, if it was negligible, but it was certainly difficult, and that's why some outside facilitators really, really help.
Okay. And I think the other thing that I guess one of the things that we've done in Michigan here is at times we've tried to – I'm really ICWA-focused, you know, in this process of a partnership because I think that that's where we have to start. There seems to be at times that we get far afield from this. You know, that, again, we're, you know, and I heard one person talk about at the local level these things. Maybe it's easier to expand this model or expand the processes at the local level than it would be at a higher level. Is that an assumption I could make?
Well, let me just use one example, Bill.
Okay.
The state level is really useful for kind of, you know, trying to change the culture in the state so that there's better cooperation. But one thing we want to get done, for example, is we definitely need more Native American resource families. Well, that's very hard to do at a state level. We really need to do that at a local level. That's why we think our regional collaboratives will be very important.
I think that's great.
Mary, I'm afraid we used a lot of time.
Okay, I think that's fine, though. We're in good shape. We can, Steve, if you want to at this point, we can move on and hear from Oregon, and then we can have some more discussion generally about questions for Oregon and also some any general questions about state-tribal collaboration.
Great.
Okay, great. So we'll do that now. We'll move on to Oregon, and I'm going to turn it over to Mary McNevins in Oregon.
Hello, I'm Mary McNevins. I'm the Indian Child Welfare Manager for the Department of Human Services in Oregon. And I'm a Muscogee Creek Chickasaw and Choctaw and have sat on both sides of the tribal and state table. And so I think I bring a unique perspective to this work and relationships. I have with me Lois Miller from the I'll let her introduce herself.
My name is Lois Miller, and I'm the DAP coordinator for the Confederated Tribes of CPS.
Warm Springs.
You want to tell me tribal member? And I'm a tribal member of Warm Springs also.
And Nancy, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Nancy Keeling, and I'm the administrator of the Office of Safety and Permanency for Children, which is the office that oversees the 6 major child welfare programs in the policy, practice, and program area for child welfare for the state of Oregon.
And we have some replacements. So on some of the PowerPoint handouts, you'll see like Ramona Foley's name, but she's on an airplane flying back east, and Becky Means, the director of Warm Springs, and her son broke his wrist. So I've got 2 replacements that are filling in, and I'm very happy that they're here with me, and I was looking for a replacement for myself, but I couldn't find one, so you're stuck with me. But anyway, you're going to probably hear a little bit different perspective from the state of Oregon and the Oregon tribes, and so we'll just jump right into it. I don't know how many of you have the PowerPoint pulled up, but on your first slide, we're going to go over the Oregon Tribal State Collaboration, the history of the Oregon tribes and the state. So I'll just start in that we have 9 federally recognized tribes in Oregon. We have both a combination of Public Law 280 and non-280 tribes. And so we have a little bit unique situation here in Oregon. Our tribes are the Burns Paiute, the Kuzlo, Umpqua, and Siuslaw Indians, the Coquille, the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua, the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, the Klamath Tribes, Confederated Tribes of Siletz, and the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla, and the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. Oregon tribes and DHS have had a long history of positive relationships and collaboration, and this helps promote the tribal-state working relationships. since I am the ICWA manager for the department, I want to talk a little bit about our Tribal Child Welfare Tribal-State Advisory Committee, and that's represented by our Tribal Child Welfare Program directors. And on this advisory committee, they represent and make recommendations into the policy for the state of Oregon, anything that affects the tribes in this area. The co-chair is elected by the representatives to the committee from the tribes, and this person is also the tribal representative to our statewide Child Welfare Advisory Committee. So there's a mechanism for taking recommendations from our advisory group to our statewide committee. Our Tribal State Advisory Committee was established in 1979, shortly after the ICWA was passed. It went through kind of a number of bumps and curves and detours in its existence, but in the last, I would say, probably 20 years, it's really functioning and very fine-tuned into the direction of where that committee has gone. I would like to thank the Resource Center for inviting us to be a part of this. We in Oregon, through our tribal-state partnerships, have used a number of the National Resource Centers to further our work. The work committees that and recommendations that come out of the advisory committee evolve out of that, and we establish some like short and long-term projects, and the National Resource Centers have been very gracious in assisting with that. In a few minutes, we're going to discuss the laws, committee roles, and responsibilities in detail. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Nancy Keeling, who's going to talk about Senate Bill 770, which is our state law, and she'll hit some of the high points of this. And we did post this to the website, so if you have any follow-up questions you want to ask or further down the road, then feel free to or email us. Nancy?
Sure. If you're following along, the third slide is in reference to Senate Bill 770. We're really proud of this law in Oregon. In 1996, a former governor, Governor Kitzhaber, issued an executive order regarding government-to-government relations between the state of Oregon and American Indian tribes in Oregon. Then in 2002, a large number of senators and representatives forwarded Senate Bill 770, which was passed with great glee in Oregon. And it really solidifies the long and positive relationship with Oregon State and Oregon tribes. So I was just going to hit a couple of the highlights because it really demonstrates the relationship and the communication and how it has been prioritized through this law. And then I think most of you will have that from the website and can refer to it if you want to do that. Senate Bill 770 directs the state agency to develop and implement a policy that identifies individuals in the state agency who are responsible for developing and implementing programs of the state agency, which is the Department of Human Services, that affects tribes. It establishes a process to identify the programs of the state agency that affect tribes, and it promotes communication between the state agency and the tribes. It also promotes a positive government-to-government relationship between the state of Oregon and the tribes on an ongoing basis. And at least once a year, the Department of Administrative Services, in consultation with the Commission on Indian Services, provides training to the state agency managers and Intuit's employees who have regular communication with tribes on the legal status of tribes, the legal rights of members of tribes, and issues of concerns to the tribes. And then once a year, our governor convenes a meeting at which representatives of the state agencies and the tribes work together to achieve mutual goals. So there are a number of other things that are actually highlighted in the law, but those are the things that I think are really important. The efforts of the state agency to promote communication between the agency and the tribes in the government-to-government relationships are clear in this law. Tribal liaisons are identified throughout the state agencies. So as you can see, this law formalizes and promotes communication and a positive relationship between the Oregon tribes and the state of Oregon. Mary?
Okay, thank you, Nancy. Now I want to go back to talking about our Tribal State Advisory Committee. As I said, it was established around 1979. There was, you know, some startup spurts and stops and all of that. And, you know, as many of you know that can occur, whether it's through the state or through the tribes. But this committee, they provide the guidance, recommendation, and collaboration with DHS. The primary focus of this one is with Indian Child Welfare and consultation of the 5-year statewide child and family safety plan. But in addition, when Nancy was talking about Senate Bill 770, there are advisor groups throughout the whole agency with tribal liaisons, whether it's economic development or DOJ, all of the state agencies have liaisons that work directly with the tribes and have their own committees. But for the most part, the Tribal State Advisory Committee was the first one established very early on. They provide the input to policy, procedures, and other major decisions affecting activities or things for the tribes. There are joint ventures that are developed for training in regards to innovations in the child welfare services and the ICWA conference. This other work is the development of agreements, contracts, and MOAs. And in regards to representation, as we all know, the tribes determine who speaks for them and the nature of the state and tribal relationship should be reflected in the appropriate persons of authority, that these are folks that are designated by the tribe, the high-level leaders, officials, or managers from both the state and tribes. And those are the folks that are participating in the consultation and meetings. And that face-to-face meetings with the tribes and providing an opportunity for everyone to speak is seen as what we view as the best format for that. Each of the Oregon tribes designates a representative with an alternate. And then we have other attendees that are invited, but they don't hold an official role on the committee. Some of the major projects that the tribes and DHS have been involved in are the ICWA CFSR, and we posted the methodology and some other information to the Resource Center website. We've developed an ICWA procedures manual, and that was with input from all of the Oregon tribes. The CFSR consultation, tribal child safety and risk assessment specific to the Oregon tribes. Kathy Deserly's been the consultant on that and assisting with helping us to revise the curriculum so that it is more reflective of the Oregon tribes and cultural competency and practices. Some of the training institutes we've had are listed, and I won't go through all of them. I want to turn this over to Lois Miller from Wunschkins.
Hello. I'm going to go back to 2003, the ICWA manager.
return to position and set up a meeting with the Oregon tribes to develop consultation principles and key issues. Consultation can occur two ways: by stealth, which means the agency sends out a letter or email and asks for input. This is an offensive and disrespectful way to ask the tribes to put in their input. Some state and federal agencies may feel they have had consultation with the tribes, but this does not get it. Authentic tribal consultation is considered an ongoing process with statutory and agency policy. Numerous opportunities are in effect that provides for the Oregon tribes consultation and collaboration. Time commitment and accessibility are also important to asking for the tribes to participate in consultation. It is important that alternative formats are provided, from face-to-face, and for those tribes unable to attend video or teleconferences, and an opportunity for written comments. All of the Oregon tribes are in the state list to serve and receive information and opportunity to provide comments throughout the agency, not only for child welfare, but tribal representatives are asked to participate in work groups.
Some of the guiding principles that when we came together in 2003 for collaboration from the tribes were that there were active efforts in building partnerships, culturally competent relationships, building trust between partners, sharing expertise, active learning, that it wasn't passive, that when people came together that they were actively engaged, focus on strengths, shared training opportunities, and culturally competent workers, and accessibility to technology. Follow-up and action plans, and this is probably two of the most important ones. Don't take yourself too seriously and keep your humor. I want to talk a little bit about the methodology that we apply to the CFSR instrument that we developed for our ICWA CFSR that we began specifically at Midtown. And it was an addendum developed to address the added requirements for services to Native children and families. It was comprised of a team of 12 persons from the Oregon tribes and DHS who were selected to participate in the review. And we had a number of recommendations were made in developing a program improvement plan. And the ICWA Addendum and Instrument is of value, and we're going to be using it statewide and looking at other areas where there's a high population of Indian children in state custody. Nancy, you want to take it over from here?
Sure. Well, we have heard Mary's words about consultation and what that needs to look like. Our CFSR in Oregon will be in September. We've already completed our self-assessment, so we are gearing up through the summer for the review teams to be here and ready to go in September. And in that vein, Oregon's efforts for an ongoing and planful process to involve the tribes in CFSR have been happening for a number of months. We began by meeting with tribes to get their involvement, to assess their true interest, and to determine what was important to the tribes when we looked at CFSR information for the child welfare cases in Oregon. There were special interest surveys that were conducted for the tribes who assisted in development of what needed to be included in the survey. There was a walkabout survey to narrow the topics and identify priorities, and that was conducted at an advisory meeting earlier in the year. I had to ask Mary what a walkabout survey was, and what she explained to me was it was an opportunity for people to have things on the wall where they could just walk up at their own leisure and determine different kinds of things they wanted to work on by either putting slash marks or dots or something like that. And I like the term. It's a walkabout survey. We also did a Survey Monkey that was sent out to tribes with follow-up, with a phone call for those who preferred to walk through the survey with the assistance of some DHS staff. There were three tribal representatives who have participated on the statewide conference calls. Although these calls are focused on the CFSR state requirements, it's helpful to them in regard to what they're doing with ICWA. Engagement of ongoing tribal participation requires thinking of ways that are of interest and something that tribes see a benefit in. The ICWA addendum created an opportunity for the tribes to feel they had a voice and weren't overwhelmed by too much state information. We're all overwhelmed by too much state
information. No kidding.
Tribes and states need to identify the most important parts of the CFSR and where they can participate so they have an authentic voice. And I think that's the important piece for all of our partners, that they have an authentic voice and an involvement. We also need to be real careful about the time for tribes to participate, that they are a resource, and that we're respectful of their time-limited abilities. We also want to be sure there are alternate formats that are developed. Oregon really values our tribal involvement in CFSR, and we appreciate their input and their participation.
We just want to take a few more minutes. The Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs had put a PowerPoint together for this training opportunity, and while we're not going to go through the whole PowerPoint, we're just going to talk about a few things that I think are important from the tribal perspective. And always in Oregon, we always have the tribal voice in making sure that they're represented and at the table. So Lois is just going to take a few minutes to go over a few things, and then we'll turn it back over to y'all for questions.
Well, we have joint training opportunities have been made for the benefit of tribal CPS and local DHS programs throughout the year. Example, Title IV-E eligibility, Title IV-E reviews, medical cards, treatment referrals, GAP, FACES, permanency planning, citizen review board, DV, child development, and foster care, and etc. Oregon Tribes and State DHS quarterly advisory meetings. Oregon ICWA manager, Oregon ICWA liaisons developed. Oregon tribes are able to voice concerns and advocate for change as when needed. Relationships are built among tribes and state central office directors, so team building efforts start at the top and then flows downward throughout DHS in Oregon. What makes this work? Identifying what needs for both agencies and built on strengths. Communication is ongoing. Resources are shared between agencies regularly. Staffs are regularly introduced to each other. Areas of concern are presented, discussed, and find solutions to continue partnership. Supportive directors and supervisors are important to both teams. Having quarterly state and tribal regional meetings. Statewide resources. Tribal CPS and local DHS programs work collaboratively, together for resources that may be beneficial for our children, families. Examples are treatment, hard to place children, testing, Title IV-E, TANF. Tribal CPS is able to contact local DHS programs and or Tri-County DHS programs to certify foster homes, to do a dual cert foster care certification. This occurs vice versa, and DHS honors tribal foster care certification. Annual tribal and state ICWA conference, information sharing, and relationships building opportunities. And there's more information available on the website tomorrow.
I'd like to really thank Nancy and especially Lois for filling in at the very last minute. And so I really appreciate both of you for doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
And this is Mary O'Brien from the Research Center. We appreciate you all from Oregon taking the time to share your experience. Mary, should we take some questions for people from Oregon now?
Sure, we can answer them.
Okay. Great. Do any of the conference participants have some questions or comments for the folks from Oregon?
Yes, this is Joanne Gibbons from Alaska.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi. And I'd like to ask if you would be, if you, Mary, if you folks would be willing to share the ICWA on-site review addendum that you developed.
Sure. We posted the methodology, and we are you talking about the tool, the instrument tool?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we can share it.
That'd be great.
Oh, great. Mary, if you send it to the Resource Center, we'll put it up on that on the website, okay?
Okay, good. And we'll get that sent to you probably later today or tomorrow. Okay.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I must give recognition to our research and federal compliance program. They were just so dedicated in assisting with that and then compiling all the data, and I do need to recognize them.
Hi, this is Allison Wilson from Nebraska. And we have a question about the Tribal State Advisory Committee that makes the recommendations for policy. You said that it included the membership of each of your tribes. We were wondering if there were, like, Native American cultural centers in your urban areas, and if so, did you or are those folks also included on the advisory committee?
Yes, they are invited to the meetings. They don't hold the official role because the Tribal State Advisory Committee is comes out of the government-to-government relationship, but the Native American urban community in Portland, nonprofit in Portland called NEA, they regularly attend, and they're part of the agenda, on the agenda, and if they have anything that they want to bring up. We also have contracts with them in regards to independent living program, and this year, Oregon is a 4E waiver state, and the 4E waiver, we're going to include NEA's, the nonprofit, and all of the nine tribes will also be getting contracts through that.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Are there other questions or comments on the line, either for, you know, Oregon or South Dakota, or more generally about state, tribal state collaboration?
This is Sue Hans in California, and I had a question for both, and I'm interested in the independent living program, and I know that there is a teleconference coming up for the needs of transition-age youth, but I am interested in hearing about how Oregon and South Dakota work in terms of the ILP and providing services to, again, the transition age tribal foster.
Okay, well, I'll answer just or provide just some information, and then I'll turn it over to Nancy since that is under her administration. There's we have appropriated ILP funding for the tribes in Oregon, Warm Springs, the Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs has a contract. And then the other tribes wanted to pool their resources, and that contract is with NEA in the urban area because there's a high percentage of Native children in that area. So it serves a bigger population. And Nancy, you want to?
Well, the only thing I would add is that the same resources are available to tribal children in tribal foster care that are available to other children in foster care through the Independent Living Program. And I think there is a conference call coming up that may have more information.
Oregon should be. Hi, this is Carmen Sanchez in Region 5 in Chicago. I have a question. These sound like wonderful collaborations, and I was thinking, did you have any barriers that you had to overcome or any resistance? And maybe if you can talk a little bit about that and how you overcame them.
Great question, Ms. Mary.
Are you asking from both of us, Oregon and
yeah.
South Dakota?
Yes, yes.
Yes.
You wouldn't mind.
Yeah. That's an interesting question. I think we should hear from both of you guys on that. It's very important. Oregon's obviously has been going on for such a very long time. So I don't know if you can look back, but think over time of some of the barriers, and then South Dakota, you know, is more recent. So maybe you guys would have something to say about that.
Well, I think Nancy and I can think of one barrier, and that's in a. It kind of comes out in a personality of a person, but, you know, you run up against that. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
personalities of people dictate sometimes how things go, and, you know, both state and tribal, because we've had some situations where, you know, maybe sometimes people aren't real happy or they get focused on one little thing and then it explodes into other areas. So, yeah, there's certainly barriers there, but I think we have a process in the state of Oregon, and we have relationships. Like Nancy can go out in the tribal community, Ramona, all of our administrators, and tribal folks know them, and, you know, they can have conversations and stuff. And so, you know, these kinds of things I think we try to really talk through and resolve. There may be times where the state agency just isn't able to do things, and we'll say, you know, this is what we can do, and this is what we can't do, just so y'all know. And that's what the Oregon tribes want to know. Just tell us what, you know, is workable and what isn't, so we understand. But, you know, don't be wishy-washy. Make sure that the right administrator is attending the meeting. We want somebody that can give approval or disapproval or, you know, on requests and those kinds of things. So they don't want people at the meetings that say, well, I got to take this back and find out if we can do this. They want the key people there in attendance so we can resolve and work through these issues. Nancy,
amen.
Did you I would add to that is Oregon has been doing this a long time, but there are always issues. And we have not only the formal relationship through the advisory committees and those sorts of things, but it's relationship, 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 and it's being able to, if there's a problem or a concern or a misunderstanding, then, you know, a tribal person can call and say, I want to sit down with somebody and talk about that, and we make that happen, and it goes both ways. And I think it's that whole issue of addressing just an ongoing relationship all the time, not waiting for a specific event or a specific issue to come up.
I think from South Dakota's perspective, it's similar. You know, it's the whole trust thing and trying to get over that, you know, belief that it may be the same old, same old. We're all just going to do business. And so we really have to work hard to, you know, be open about the fact that we are trying to you know, make changes and partner, you know, towards improving the outcome. Some individuals, it's going to be harder than others to. Sometimes that's kind of what gets in the way of some of the meetings. Is there are some individuals that are still a little further back as far as the relationship situation.
This is Teresa from South Dakota, and I guess my comment would be that there are some tribal members who are still not wanting to come to the table, but I think that after they find out what it is that we're doing and how we are impacting the work and the outcomes here, then they say, well, yeah, I want to come to the meeting, or yeah, I would like to be part of that. And I think for us, I think it's just having more public relations out there and educating the tribes as well as other stakeholders more about what it is we are exactly doing so that people are all on the same page so that we can collaborate more effectively.
I think a couple other things that are really important, this is Mary from Oregon, that you have within your state a mechanism in creating one, either a department tribal liaison and certainly an ICWA manager. I think those are really important. And that where you position those folks is really critical. That, you know, for me, I'm very, very fortunate that I don't have a lot of layers. I report directly to Ramona Foley, who's the assistant director for DHS, and so that provides me to have the opportunity to have my peers at the same level, you know, in administration, and that, you know, when issues come up, that I'm able to bring those issues forward as well to the group and have some really good discussion in regards to that.
My name is Bill Mamberto. I'm from Michigan. I have a couple of questions. One, a lot of folks are talking about getting the state folks at the table and people that count. And this is something that we've been talking about in Michigan, it seems like, for a number of years here. And I guess we haven't been able to do that. And I guess how do we get the state to see the serious nature of how we want to be able to build this collaborative and to make a commitment to it? Two questions I'm going to throw out real quick is that, one, what I'm wondering is the number of issues where a gaming state, that seems to play a lot of issues in this process of services to children, quite frankly. The other issue that I want people to speak to is the changes in the political winds and how that may impact ongoing collaborative efforts. Three questions there.
Bill, this is Nancy from Oregon. I guess one of the things that I would see as helpful to all three of your questions would be something more formalized, that when we put Senate Bill 770 in place, it really became a strong message from the governor, but went into law that Oregon would collaborate, that Oregon and the tribes would collaborate together. And having that formalized document that at a very high level brings people together on a regular basis, I think has really allowed us who work in the trenches then to carry that forward, because it's just been an absolute expectation. Mary, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think for child welfare, it really solidified close to 30 years work that we've been doing. But for the other state agencies that hadn't been doing it, it really laid it out there. It was very important. And it's not just a, we got to do this. There's very big commitment from all the state agencies and with the tribes. And there's been some unbelievable things that have occurred from these groups that have come together, even outside of child welfare.
All honesty, in Michigan we do a lot better, I think, in some places outside child welfare, and unfortunately we don't do as well within the context of child welfare.
Do you have a state ICWA manager?
We have a position within the state. I would not call that position an ICWA manager or anything of that nature.
Okay, so it's someone that's just designated as another job duty?
Yeah, and they really don't manage ICWA in the sense of managing it, in the sense of being able to track ICWA cases, being able to document those type of things, or intervene even at in-case process. We have a position there that is a coordinator of the Office of Indian Programs, but again, that's a big statement in a lot of room for one person. We don't have actually in that position, I think the person's on here, but it gets pushed from one office to another on occasion and at various levels, and there doesn't seem to be some consistency there. And to be quite honest with you, is that we don't get, we need the people that make decisions at the table.
Right. Mary?
Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead.
Hi. It's Kim Thomas from New York State, and as I'm listening to some of this, the questions and the comments and the dialogue, I understand that, Oregon and state of Washington, you guys have a lot more experience under your belt than even we do out here in New York. But, you know, I want to share a little bit of hope. I've seen in the last 7 or 8 years New York State go full circle and start having folks come to the table that can make commitments to our tribal communities. And I think, and you know, we're a gaming state. You know, we hear a lot of comments about, well, you know, you got three tribes, they got gaming. Why do they need state money to do child welfare? And I think how we've had to respond to that and educate the state leaders is to bring the right tribal folks to the table, teach the state how to listen to what those needs are, and we make sure that we leave gaming out of the discussion, number one. And number two, we make sure that we get input when we do our annual service plan to the feds. And I think that's what gets the political attention of the state folks is when the feds come in and review, they want to see what kind of work and collaboration we're doing with our tribal communities. So I just want to throw that comment out that seemed to be a turning point for us is, you know, the federal review of the states is what kind of opened up our doors, but it kept the doors open to getting some things accomplished here in New York.
That may be a way we have to go. We don't get much input sometimes to plans either.
Right, and I think Mary has recognized this too when we've gone out that a lot of states don't share their annual, their federal plans with the tribes. And does anyone else on the call know how a tribal nation can request that and they are entitled to it even if it's not offered to them? Isn't that correct? Mary?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I believe
Mayor, help me out.
You know, they're, don't we post ours, Nancy, to our website?
I don't know the answer to that. The federal plan?
Yeah.
Those
well, it seems like we post everything.
Yes, we do. We post everything.
Post everything, and then, I send out tons of information to the tribes, and we go over the plans and the PIP, and they're part of that. They have, you know, input into that.
So this gentleman is saying that that's really not done where he is, but there's nothing that would prohibit them from asking the state to review their federal plan on child welfare.
Yeah, absolutely.
And absolutely take a look at what are they saying they're doing as far as tribal council.
What I'm saying to you is that, just to clarify that it is done, you know, sometimes we have, as tribes, have some concerns with the time frame type of process and, quite frankly, with the review of those reports that go in and the responses to the plans, because, you know, there's not always a consensus that what the state says necessarily is what we believe really happened.
Yeah, this is Mary O'Brien. The presenters definitely talked about the need to, respect the time frames that tribes had to do it. It really is an ongoing collaboration where there's a response, an ongoing dialogue. Does anybody else have any comments about that?
This is Loa Porter from Wisconsin, and back to the CFSR review, they are online, and I think one of the advantages today for Michigan is that we do have someone from Region 5 in Chicago that may probably add more information of where that report or plan can be found for the state of Michigan. Sorry, Carmen.
The report for Michigan is, and Paul can speak to this, at our tribal-state partnership meeting, this is Carol Steeman from the State Court Administrative Office, at the tribal-state partnership meeting we had just a couple weeks ago, that report, the drafts were disseminated, and there was a discussion last year, a conference call with the tribes. My understanding is, though, that perhaps some of the comments and suggestions that were made by the tribes during that conference call were not actually integrated into the report. So there's some efforts being made, and I know that the director of the Department of Social or Human Services was present at the meeting, but I think we're looking at some underlying trust issues that Bill mentioned and finding a way to really define for ourselves what consultation and collaboration means in Michigan.
Thank you.
I think if you, once we get our, we didn't post our survey either, our survey tool,
I don't know if anybody's interested in that. You know, it's something we developed with the Oregon tribes, and we talked about the process that we went through. So I wouldn't want folks to just take it and say, well, you know, this is what will work for us, because that's what I think this whole issue is about, is coming together and the development and the input and the collaboration in the development of something like that.
Right.
This is Bill again. You know, in respect to that, I think that's kind of what our track is here, too. That's why we have, why we're participating in this conference. I think, we are pursuing what's collaboration look like? What is it really supposed to be responsive to? And I think there are a number of people in the tribal state partnership that we have that are indeed committed to that process, including on both sides of the table, both the tribes and the, I think, the state. I think we all agree we need to do better at that.
Right. We're coming to the end of our time. This is Mary O'Brien, so we probably just have two or three more minutes, so probably have time for another question or comment.
Yeah, this is Ray Noyer. I'm from the Yankton Sioux Tribe. I'm an enrolled member, and, yes. The tribes, all the tribes in South Dakota, established a great Sioux Nation, Iqua Consortium, with all the tribes in South Dakota. And in the beginning, we lobbied for a state Iqua bill, I think two or three years in a row, and it never happened. And I know that from that came Iqua, the governor set up a Iqua commission to look at what was going on in South Dakota. And the tribes get together. I mean, all the Iqua consortium, they get together, and that's the vocal point with the tribes. And I think all the tribes have a voice in the collaborative circle, because all the Iqua directors are part of that collaborative circle. And they did really have some growing pains in the very beginning, and it came to the point where we didn't know whether the collaboration was gonna, either go or die at that time, because there were some serious issues, and with some of the people sitting on the board, some of the native people, and but they did resolve a lot of them issues. They were really very tough issues to resolve, and the Iqua consortium is still looking at lobbying for the Iqua bill in the state of South Dakota, anything that starts has growing pains, and being on the part of the collaborative circle, it's a good thing, and I think that it's been a learning process for the tribes as well as the state, and I guess the report that the state that's going through in 2008, I would really like to see how they fare this time from the last one, because I think I really got the ball rolling as far as state of South Dakota to really open up the tribes, because they found out that, through the Indian Child Welfare Act, the law that was passed in 1978, has really come to light here in the last few years. Otherwise, it was just kind of ignored a little bit by the state of South Dakota. So I'm glad that we formed this collaborative circle. Now we're working towards what we should have been working towards all along, as the children, and trying to be able to see what we can do for the best interests of the children in the state of South Dakota.
That's an excellent point to end on. And I think, Steve and Kathy, do you have any last comments you want to make?
Well, this is Kathy, and I just wanted to say I agree. I think Raymond just really summed it up that, we would wish that after 25 years that ICWA would be the reason for states and tribes coming to the table in collaboration. It appears that the CFSR is what is bringing tribes together now, and that's, for what it's worth, that's a good thing, because it is about the safety, the permanence, and well-being of all children, including Native children. And where these collaborations are occurring, there are positive results that are coming out of them, whether they've been going on for many years or for a short term. So I'm just very honored to be a part of the work in South Dakota and in other states where I've worked, and appreciate being on the call today.
Real quick, this is Merlin Weyer, and I really appreciate what Ray said. There is one thing I do want to respond to, though. As far as ignoring ICWA, That wasn't the issue. It wasn't.
Yeah, I guess I should never use that word. You know.
That's okay, Ray. You're my buddy. So, but you know, we did have some struggles in following it for a number of reasons, and you know, some of it we found was around the whole issue of we needed to involve the tribes more in helping us follow ICWA from the standpoint of being able to get things done. So, you know, it wasn't an issue of ignoring. It was more an issue of being able to meet some of the requirements with staffing and resources and the state courts and all. It's a very complex issue for us. And that's why, you know, we're hoping that the collaborative circle will really help improve in that area.
Great. Thank you so much. I want to end the call by thanking everybody for coming, all the participants for your great questions, and all the presenters for the information that you've given and the time. Thank you so much to everyone from South Dakota and Oregon who presented today and talked with us. There is a handout on the website that has email contact information for all of the presenters, so please feel free to follow up with any of them or with Steve or Kathy or folks at the resource centers. We do have an evaluation form for this teleconference. We appreciate it if you fill it out and give us some feedback. The link that's online, SurveyMonkey, it was the link was in the email that you got, and you'll get another one as well with the link. If you want to give us some feedback, that would be great. So, again, thank you very much to the presenters, and we hope to see you at some of our future calls. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference for today. Everyone have a great evening. You may now disconnect.